from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all today, following up, the banana story, the story of the search that this program has launched on your behalf, don't you know, for the world's most expensive banana. I think, well, it's close. Ken, in Wales, we have a listener in Wales, ladies and gentlemen, says, I was at a hotel in Scotland last week and had been told when I checked in that breakfast was included in the cost of the room. The next morning, once I was seated at the restaurant, I checked, and they told me it was not covered. Oh, the Scots and the Welsh. All I wanted was a banana, an apple, and a cup of coffee. The cost of the continental breakfast was £14, about $25. That would make the banana cost about $8. Does this count? Asks Ken from Wales. I don't know, an $8 banana sounds like it counts to me, but that it's an inferred $8 banana. It's not a stated $8 banana. So if it does win, it wins with an asterisk, Ken, as does everything Welsh. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, this week here in Southern California, we said goodbye to Ray Charles. And I don't know now if anybody else can really sing that song.
I know this song.
All right.
Thine alabaster cities gleam, undimmed by human tears. America. This should be our national anthem. America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. I'll get out of here till 9 o'clock.
No, you can leave now. Hello, welcome to the show.
Take a look at me, tell me, can't you see? I'm right in my cups, I'm not myself tonight. It's an awful curse when you have to nurse a pair of soap pups, otherwise everything's all right. All dressed up, Marcel and everything, all dressed up, all set to have my fling. Here am I, breaking in a pair of shoes. I've got a date with someone I adore. Now I'm late, I know he's good and sore. Here am I, breaking in a pair of shoes. Some hot band will soon be delivering, giving out music that's mad. Should I dance, take a chance? Ouch, my tootsie, I don't know. Feet may be breaking down even, so I've got to go to town. Here goes breaking in a pair of shoes. Breaking in a pair of shoes. I've got a date with someone I adore. Now I'm late and I know he's good and sore. Here am I breaking in a pair of shoes. Oh, some hot band will soon be delivering, giving out music that's mad. Should I dance, take a chance? Ouch, my tootsie. I don't know, my feet may be breaking down. Even so, I've got to go to town. Here goes breaking in a pair of shoes.
Thank you.
things in style.
I wear Italian shoes. Club. I wear Italian shoes.
Yeah.
romance had begun. All the while we thought about each other. All the best, mate, from your son. All the best, mate, from your son. My old man. My old man.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And we start, ladies and gentlemen, well, we've started long since, but we continue now with that oh-so-copyrighted feature, Tales of Airport Security. Just one tale this week. Like so many creatures. Dear Harry, I'm a frequent business traveler, so I've gotten in the habit of printing out my tickets from the internet before I go to the airport. On a recent trip out of JFK, I breezed through security. I had to show my self-printed ticket to three separate agents in the security area. The agent checking IDs at the entrance to the security area, the agent running bags through the x-ray machine, and the agent at the exit point. Imagine, therefore, my surprise when I tried to board the plane, only to be told I had the wrong ticket. Looking down, I realized that I had given them the ticket for my prior flight a few days before departing from LAX to JFK. Apparently, all three agents missed that the date and airport were incorrect. The airline employee gave me a new ticket, and I was on my way. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen. If it ain't copyrighted, who knows the difference? Army reenlistments have dropped suddenly and dramatically at Fort Carson, Colorado, and several other posts where combat units have recently returned from Iraq. That's good progress. No, it's bad progress. That's right. The surprising decline within the past 2.5 months has jolted recruiters and military analysts and provoked questions about the war's effect on the Army's recruiting ability. This is from the Rocky Mountain News. That's why you haven't heard about it. It's an American newspaper. Since Fort Carson units began coming home in April, post recruiters have met only 57% of their quota for reenlisting first-term soldiers for a second hitch. More disturbing, recruiters say, is they're reenlisting only 46% of the quota for mid-career non-commissioned officers, young sergeants with 4 to 10 years of experience who are the backbone of the Army. That's a lot lower than where we want to be, says Master Sergeant Scott Leeling. Tom?
Oh, yeah, Scott Leeling, sure.
Scott Leeling, a Fort Carson recruiter. He says, I don't see this being a trend. I look to see a dramatic increase in the next 30 to 45 days.
Is Leeling dreaming?
I don't know, Tom. Good question. Others familiar with the Army think the numbers could signal growing discontent. Iraq may be exposing some vulnerabilities of an undersized, overstretched Army, says John Pike, director of globalsecurity.org, an Alexandria, Virginia think tank. It sounds to me like the Army is voting with its feet. Pike and others believe married soldiers are growing weary of repeated year-long deployments away from their families. We've gone from an unmarried army to a married army. These guys have come back from Iraq now, but you tell them they're going back within a year, and the wives are raising hell, says Dennis McCormick, a retired helicopter pilot who served in Vietnam and Desert Storm. Fort Carson isn't alone. According to Army figures, Fort Bragg, home of the 82nd Airborne, recruiters have met 65% of their goal of first-timers. At Fort Riley, Kansas, home of the 1st Brigade, 1st Infantry Division. Reenlistments are off sharply. Fort Hood, 51% of first-termers and 54% of mid-career soldiers are signing up. Fort Stewart, Georgia, where the 3rd Infantry Division returned from Iraq. The Army used cash bonus incentives to reenlist 95% of its first-term quota. It's like cars. Just pay me. No cash incentives have been authorized at Fort Carson or other posts, according to Tom? According to?
According to Leland.
Yeah, right. According to Leland. So that's one of the things that may be happening, thanks to the war, or not. The former head of a... Hey, this really should be a department of the broadcast now, because these reports are coming in fast and furious. News of Halliburton. We'll get some music for it. The former head of a Halliburton subsidiary that's under investigation for allegedly bribing Nigerian officials received improper personal benefits, according to Halliburton. The former official, A. Jack Stanley, although to me he's the Jack Stanley, but you know what I mean. He was appointed head of KBR, the construction subsidiary, by Vice President Dick Cheney when he ran Halliburton. Business corruption experts said the specifics Halliburton released seemed to indicate that Cheney was kept in the dark about financial wrongdoings. Imagine that. He was in a secret undisclosed location in his head. Halliburton says now it has cut any remaining ties to Stanley, who retired last year. It was unclear how Stanley benefited personally. Executives involved in bribing foreign officials often take a cut of the cash for themselves, according to an expert on corporate corruption. Halliburton spokeswoman Wendy Hall said the company was surprised at what its investigation found and portrayed Stanley as a rogue operator. She wouldn't reveal what evidence was found, apparently it was too roguish to mention, but said it didn't implicate Halliburton in the bribery. This, spokeswoman Hall said, this is a violation of the trust of the company. We strongly condemn this activity. Halliburton's trust has been violated, ladies and gentlemen. Now, for a sample of the activity they don't condemn, this from the Financial Times, a Pentagon audit has found widespread deficiencies in the way Halliburton tracks billions of dollars of government contracts in Iraq and Kuwait, leading to undercharges? No, not this time. Significant overcharges. But good guess. The findings have been bolstered by graphic accounts from former employees who told a U.S. congressman the company's subcontractors charged $100 to launder a 15-pound bag of clothing and abandoned $85,000 trucks when they suffered flat tires. Critics say Halliburton has mismanaged more than $8 billion of Iraq contracts. Yeah, that's what critics say. What do you think critics say? That the Halliburton sings good? They will also raise further questions about the Pentagon's increased reliance on private contractors to handle services from providing fuel meals to fuel delivery. The latest Pentagon report in May follows a January report that found systemic deficiencies in the way the company accounted for costs in Iraq that were passed on to the U.S. government. The new report says the company failed to monitor subcontractors adequately. The cost impact of the government is significant based on the size of KBR's operations, says the audit. KBR says in response, it was in the process of upgrading accounting procedures in Iraq. See, that they don't condemn. They just upgrade. Who is Iyad Alawi, the new interim president of Iraq? You know, we heard him this week denouncing the car bombs in Baghdad as proof of how evil these evildoers are. Those weren't his words, but that was the thrust of what he was saying. Earlier, he ran an exile organization intent on deposing Saddam Hussein that sent agents into Baghdad in the early 1990s to plant bombs and sabotage government facilities under the direction of the CIA. His group, the Iraqi National Accord, used car bombs and other explosive devices Evaluations of the effectiveness of the bombing campaign varied, although the former officials interviewed agreed that it never threatened Saddam Hussein's rule. No public records of the bombing campaign exist. Former officials said their recollections were in many cases sketchy. They couldn't even recall exactly when it occurred, though interviews made clear it was between 1992 and 1995. The Iraqi government at the time claimed that the bombs, including one it said exploded in a movie theater, resulted in many civilian casualties. But the CIA says it doesn't know whether any civilians were killed because the United States had no significant intelligence sources in Iraq back then. One former CIA agency officer based in the region, Robert Baer, recalled that a bombing during that period blew up a school bus, but he doesn't know which resistance group might have set off that bomb. Other former intelligence officials said Dr. Alawi's organization was the only resistance group involved in bombings and sabotage at that time. Another official says he doesn't recall much killing of anyone, that the bombing was ineffective. So it was either ineffective or it was vicious. But it's that those car bombs, only the evildoers do those. Ladies and gentlemen, another subject, please, because that is just becoming too bubblicious. With Roman Catholic clergy in short supply in the United States, Indian priests are picking this, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know why Lou Dobbs isn't on this one. Maybe he is. He's on this outsourcing kick over at CNN. With Roman Catholic clergy in short supply in the United States, Indian priests are picking up some of their work, saying Mass for special intentions in a sacred, if unusual, version of outsourcing. American, as well as Canadian and European churches, are sending Mass intentions or requests for services like those to remember deceased relatives to clergy in India. About 2% of India's population are Christians, most of them Catholics. In Kerala state, with one of the largest concentrations of Christians in India, churches often receive intentions from overseas. The masses are conducted in Malayalam. One more try. Malayalam, the native language. The intention is announced at Mass. Often it's a prayer for the repose of the soul of a deceased relative or for a sick family member. The requests are mostly routed to Kerala's churches through the Vatican, the bishops, or through religious bodies. Rarely prayer requests come directly to individuals. While most requests are made via mail or personally through traveling clergymen, a significant number arrive via email. So we're outsourcing prayers, ladies and gentlemen. This is from the Los Angeles dog trainer. A pair of British recruited spies in Iraq whose alarming reports of Saddam Hussein's illicit weapons were rushed to the White House shortly before the invasion last year were never interviewed by the CIA and are now viewed as unreliable. The CIA's reliance on the two Iraqis, who were recruited by Britain's MI6 in late 2002 and were thought to have access to Hussein's inner circle, are more evidence of failures in human intelligence gathering in Iraq. U.S. officials are still not able to determine the meaning of three sacredly taped conversations that Colin Powell played to the U.N. Security Council in February 2003, making the case for war. Investigators have been unable to identify who was speaking on the tapes or precisely what they were talking about. But it was scary. We've identified that. U.S. analysts also erred in their analysis of high-altitude satellite photos, repeatedly confusing Scud missile storage places with the short, half-cylindrical sheds typically used to house poultry in Iraq. As a result, as the war neared, two teams of U.N. weapons experts acting on the basis of U.S. intelligence scrambled to search chicken coops for missiles that weren't there, says a former inspector. We inspected a lot of chicken farms. His U.N. team printed up 20 gray T-shirts reading, Ballistic Chicken Farm Inspection Team. Investigations of intelligence agencies in at least four countries have found the misjudgments of Iraq's weapons were founded on circumstantial evidence, unverified secondhand accounts, false assumptions, old intelligence, and shoddy tradecraft. That's my favorite. Shoddy tradecraft. You know the spies are turning on each other when they accuse each other of that. You, sir, are guilty of shoddy tradecraft. I will not take such accusations standing up. The new Iraqi government has been so battered by violence and undercut by public disagreement. This is from Knight Ridder Newspapers. which is almost outside the bubble, but not quite. And undercut by public disagreement with U.S. officials at some in Iraq have started to wonder whether Prime Minister Iyad Alawi and his cabinet will weather the storm. Yeah, some wonder anything. But a senior U.S. intelligence official is about to publish a bitter condemnation of America's counterterrorism policy, arguing the West is losing the war against al-Qaeda and that a, quote, avaricious, premeditated, unprovoked war, unquote, in Iraq has played into Osama bin Laden's hands. The official, who writes as anonymous, told the British newspaper The Guardian that al-Qaeda is a much more proficient and focused organization than it was in 2001. Anonymous says Pervez Musharraf in Pakistan can't really tackle al-Qaeda without endangering his rule by provoking a revolt. The Pakistanis, now being fingered in several publications as having given great aid to al-Qaeda and the Taliban before 2001. Let's see. More about al-Qaeda. Or maybe not. Yes, the death and arrest of experienced operatives might have set back bin Laden's plans to some degree, but when it comes to his long-term capacity to threaten the U.S., he says, I don't think we've laid a glove on him. What I think we're seeing in al-Qaeda is a change of generation. Uh-oh. The people who are leading al-Qaeda now seem a lot more professional group. Oh, I see. Their kids work. They are more bureaucratic, more management competent, certainly more literate. Certainly this generation is more computer literate, more comfortable with the tools of modernity. I also think they're much less prone to being the Errol Flynns of al-Qaeda. They're just much more careful across the board in the way they operate. So the 9/11 Commission says we were all chaotic and our communication was not in the loop. On 9/11, everybody was running around giving orders that weren't gotten by the pilots to shoot down planes that had already crashed. And meanwhile, al-Qaeda is getting more businesslike. Is that wacky or what? And the answer is what? And now, ladies and gentlemen, to another subject. Favorite subject of this broadcast, and then we'll conclude this top of the news. News of the Digital Wonderland. Digital radio broadcast that brings CD-quality sound to the airwaves could lead to, oh no, unfettered song copying. If protections are not put in place, who do you think is warning about that? That's right, the recording industry. Your friends in the recording industry. Without copy protections, music fans could cherry-pick songs off the air and redistribute them over the internet, further deepening the woes of record labels. Warned, the record labels. U.S. regulators at the FCC should ensure that the broadcast format limits such copying so radio stations don't churn the airwaves into a giant file-sharing network, record industry officials advocate. They didn't mind in the 70s when people were saying, hey, we got the new Stones record coming up at the top of the hours. Start your tape machines. We're playing it straight through with no commercials. Oh, that was just FM. Digital radio promises to bring CD quality sound, to FM, and FM quality sound to AM. And AM quality sound to your phone? No, not quite that good. Broadcasters can also use the new digital standard to broadcast several signals at once. Record industry officials said digital radio players could soon allow listeners to record certain songs automatically when they're broadcast, allowing them to build a free library of music they might otherwise pay for. Yeah. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I just have to fess up. We consumers are engaged in a massive conspiracy to defraud the record industry. Take me to record jail.
John Henry, he says a man ain't nothing but a man. Oh, I would die with a hammer in my hand. Oh, I would
going to buy you a radio.
Bigger and bolder than the one that inspired it. These are Profiles in Carriage.
Now, you sure we have the Distinguished Service Cross in-house? Because that's the one they're going to...
John, I just have a few minutes to spare.
Get back to me later, Spenno. Senator McCain, I appreciate you dropping by.
Yeah.
Nobody saw you?
No, like Steve told me, I used the secret entryway from Senator Lott's office.
This is such a nutty place, this old Senate. I'm going to miss it.
Well, not so fast there, mister. There is a little matter of an election, isn't there?
John, my friend, I got to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Unless they find Osama bin Laden in October and the place they find him is Hillary Clinton's residence, this election is a done deal. Mm-hmm. Now, I know some of my people like to worry about it from time to time, but I'll tell you this, John. Mm-hmm. If I were worried, I'd be making better speeches. You know that.
Well, sir, that's sort of what I wanted to talk to you about.
My speeches? Get in line, Senator.
No, sir. The election.
You don't mind if I play a little guitar?
No, I know you find it relaxing, unlike those of us who have to listen to it. But... John, I've thought long and hard about your proposal that I run for what you described as a supersized vice presidency.
Well, let's not misunderstand each other, John. I said you could be like a non-evil Dick Cheney running any and everything you wanted to.
I understand that, John, and I appreciate it.
And I understand and appreciate the fact that to maintain your credibility within your own party and to avoid being a complete pariah in your Senate caucus, you've had to... issue what sound like ringing and irrevocable denials of any interest in my offer. It's been utterly believable.
But now
it comes time to drop the charade and join the crusade to unseat the worst president of the United States since Benjamin Harrison.
Well, Harrison only served for about 100 hours, didn't he?
That's what I mean. This is worse because it's been longer.
Anyway, I just wanted to say ringingly and irrevocably... I'm rejecting your offer with total and complete gratitude.
John, you can't be serious.
If you saw my schedule, I'm on my way out to a campaign appearance with the worst president since Benjamin Harrison.
John?
John, I've said this until Larry King's blue in the face from hearing it. I'm not interested in being the vice president.
No, now this isn't that old canard about the job not being worth a warm bucket of spit, is it? Because...
No, I know, supersized. Yeah. No, sir, I think it's more that being a senator agrees with me. I get to shoot off my mouth whenever I want to, and people listen to me, and I can still live a relatively normal life without all the... security distractions.
Oh, John, be serious now. Anyone who wanted a normal life wouldn't have gotten into public life to begin with. Which do you want to do, really? Help shape the future of your country or wait in the checkout line to buy some grow mulch at Home Depot?
Well, it wouldn't be grow mulch back home. We're xeriscaping, but...
All right, well,
John, damn it. It really does come down to this. I was born a Republican. I spent 5 years in a Vietnamese prison camp being tortured as a Republican.
And you've been tortured as a Republican watching the guy you should have beaten try to govern for the last 3 years. Come on, our own commission has just concluded that these people didn't even know how to scramble jets on a day we were being attacked. Query whether they could have even scrambled eggs. I could make that pithier, but you know what I'm driving at here.
Yes, I do, John.
I mean, do you really think you would have continued reading to fifth graders while the nation was under attack? Do you think I would have?
Well, if you were serious about supersizing the vice presidency, of course you could have. I would have taken the reins until you got back. But look here, John.
Yeah.
There would have to be far more serious disagreements over fundamental issues for me to leave my party.
Well, but John, I hope you read the constitutional analysis we faxed over to you. You wouldn't have to stop being a Republican. I have a copy right here if you...
John, my friend, I hope you know me well enough to know that I spent one of those years in Vietnam memorizing the Constitution, so I know very well that a president and vice president can be at different parties, but... realistically, were I to run as your vice president, I'd be about as welcome in the Republican Party as an Israeli at a Hezbollah picnic. I mean, I don't know if they actually have picnics in Hezbollah, but...
Well, you want a difference, my friend? Under a Kerry administration, we'd know something like that. We'd have intelligence that was, for lack of a different word, intelligent. I mean, John, my good friend, mm-hmm. yes, we all supported the Iraq War for different reasons. You because you believed the president, and I because I believed Tom Daschle that we should get Iraq off the table so we could talk about prescription drug benefits for seniors. But obviously both of us would go about this next phase of the Iraq adventure differently than the current occupant. We'd go to the UN.
They just went to the UN.
We'd go more to the UN and better.
They got a unanimous resolution.
We'd get a bunch of them. Look, do you really want a front for an administration that thinks Ahmad Chalabi is a more reliable source than the 9/11 Commission?
Yeah, that whole Chalabi business gives me a certain amount of discomfort.
Well,
but
on
issues we can actually do something about, like taxes and abortion, this administration and I are on the same page. I'm sorry, my friend.
It would have been a great adventure.
Yeah, that it would.
I mean, obviously, I'm sad, even though there's a great wealth of vice presidential talent in my own party to choose from. I really did believe in the wisdom of this idea, and it wasn't even mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I did sort of promise my staff that I could deliver you. It's in a way, this undermines their faith in me.
Oh, look, I'm sure you'll make a fine vice presidential choice, and we'll beat the hell out of him and you for a few months, and you'll do the same to us at a slightly lower budget level.
I guess I know what this means. I really am going to have to start making better speeches.
I guess so. See you in January, my friend.
Use the front exit, Putz.
Even though he's looking straight at you, these are Profiles in Carriage.
If it's really love that found its way here, oh, how am I to know? Will it linger?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here on the show, the new wrinkle in our copyrighted feature. The near apologies of the week. And some real apologies, too. Ever since the New Republic broke with liberal orthodoxy by strongly supporting President Bush's war with Iraq, the magazine has been getting a steady stream of emails from readers demanding an apology. Now the Weekly has admitted it was wrong to have backed the war based on the claims that Saddam was hiding weapons of mass destruction. We feel regret, but no shame. Our strategic rationale for war has collapsed, says an editorial hammered out after a contentious 3.5-hour editor's meeting. I wanted the editorial to be honest, not just about the war and other people's mistakes, but our mistakes, says editor Peter Beinart. We had a responsibility to look in the mirror. The magazine's editorial dances up to the line of saying it was a mistake to support the war, but doesn't quite cross it. The central assumption underlying this magazine's strategic rationale for war now appears to have been wrong, it says. The magazine has a strategic rationale. Imagine that. Even without nuclear biological weapons, Hussein may still have been a threat, but, quote, saying he was a threat does not mean he was a threat urgent enough to require war, the magazine says. In fact, waiting to confront Iraq would have allowed the United States to confront more immediate dangers because our military is stretched so thin in Iraq we cannot threaten military action in Iran or North Korea, unquote. Even on the moral rationale, the administration's mistakes, including having winked at torture, according to the magazine, means that this war's moral costs have been higher than we foresaw. Says Marty Peretz, who owns the New Republic and who argued against going too far, quote, I don't think the New Republic owes anybody an apology. These apologies are silly, he says. Let's get to some silly apologies then. Teen queen Lindsay Lohan has apologized to mental health watchdogs who slammed her for repeatedly using the word retarded in interviews. That is so retard. I mean, unwise. The Mean Girls actress, 17, has used the slang term several times in recent talks with journalists, using it to deflect questions about her alleged breast implants, to describe the paparazzi, and to deny reports of a feud with rival star Hilary Duff. That is so... There are a few more deeply wounding words than these, which are painful reminders that people with disabilities are still not fully welcome in our society, says the president of the American... A Council Rock, New York primary school kindergarten class was shown a video last month that included a live human birth without prior parental consent. In response, the Brighton Central School District notified parents by mail, invited them to see the video and talk about ways to deal with the consequences. Five parents came to see the video, asked questions, and talked with counselors. The Council Rock principal, Janet Gibbons, apologized in a June 9th letter mailed to parents. She went on to say that she believed the video was well done, but some portions were not appropriate for a kindergarten audience. Long after his death, Nikita Khrushchev has had a case relating to his role in the execution of Hungarian Prime Minister Imre Nagy dropped. Hungarian police said Khrushchev and former Communist Party boss in Hungary, János Kadar, were guilty of the deportation of Nagy to Romania. But they also said in a decree the case was being dropped because the two were dead. At a ceremony on Wednesday to mark the anniversary of the reburial of Nagy, Hungarian Prime Minister Peter Megyesi said Hungary had to recognize the past to move on. I apologize for what happened then. I must say this even though I was only 14 years old in 1956. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger said in a recent letter to a congressman that Governor George Pataki of New York's proposal to make public colleges turn over student loan processing to a New York state agency at the risk of losing state aid is prohibited by federal law. But hours after that criticism, Schwarzenegger's office retracted it. A Schwarzenegger staffer said the California governor's office had been contacted by Pataki's staff. We regret the comment or judgment placed upon Pataki's proposal. We're in the throes of budget negotiations, said a Schwarzenegger spokesperson. We apologize for dipping our toes in New York waters.
Ugh.
Fijian Highlanders, who last year apologized for their ancestors eating an English missionary, are now uprooting marijuana plants in the hope of lifting the curse they say they're under. The pastor said people in the village of Nabutautau were uprooting millions of dollars worth of marijuana plants. It was his group that carried out the elaborate healing of the land ceremony to apologize for missionary Thomas Baker being clubbed to death before being eaten in 1867. The ritual was directed at 10 of Baker's Australian descendants. The marijuana had been the only source of income for the villagers, but they believed it was part of the curse and brought evil. Another joke made at the expense of the city of Detroit and the NBA championship-winning Pistons has landed Chicago's number one sportscaster in trouble. Mark Giangreco will be given serving a one-week suspension without pay after he said on Channel 7's late newscast Tuesday, he showed an old black-and-white movie clip of the city being burned to the ground and joked that it was just another typical night for Detroit. He followed that by immediately saying, "I am just kidding." "I now realize those comments and visuals were inappropriate and insensitive. I deeply regret making them," Giangreco said in a statement. "While I did not intend to offend our viewers, I feel badly I have. Please accept my apology." A Sri Lankan probe has ruled out sabotage after a dove to be freed as a symbol of peace turned out to be dead in the hands of the de facto defense minister. Military police have cleared public security ministers of a hand in the bird's untimely death and established it was already dead when it was given to him. The death was due to natural causes. The military has tendered an apology to the minister over the embarrassing incident. It was the final act in the Spinal Tap Break Like the Wind show, 1992, ladies and gentlemen. A Canadian man accused of being one of the biggest spammers in the world by Yahoo has agreed to stop sending unwanted emails and plans to help educate children about the dangers of the Internet. In March, Yahoo sued Eric Head and his father and brother as part of an ad industry crackdown. An unsolicited email, Yahoo alleged the Canadian Heads ran a huge spamming operation and sent more than 94 million emails in 1 month alone to users of Yahoo. The Heads have settled the lawsuit and agreed to pay Yahoo at least $100,000 U.S. The allegation center on 25-year-old Eric Head, who ran a bulk email business from the family's home in Kitchener, Ontario. He has shut down his operation called Gold Disc Canada and become a drummer in a rock band. That's progress. Eric is out of business, says a Los Angeles lawyer who represented the Heads. He's going to play in a band and find a way to use his knowledge to help protect kids on the Internet. That sounds like something from Spinal Tap, too. These apologies are turning into a plug. Isn't that wild? But wait, there's more. Oh, there are always more. The man who made a name for himself on ESPN this week by pushing a little boy out of the way, rushing for a foul ball at a baseball game. He knocked a four-year-old boy aside, is what he did. He now plans to give it to the boy. The fan, Matt Starr, also agreed to send a letter of apology to the family of Nick O'Brien and buy them tickets to future Rangers games, a club official said. "The fan let it be known to us," says the Rangers, "that he wanted to give the ball back, and we informed the family that it's going to happen." The club said the Rangers did not influence Starr. He did this on his own, through an intermediary. He did it on his own through an intermediary, ladies and gentlemen. Did George W. Bush, former Texas Ranger president, have anything to do with it? No. And combining two of our copyrighted features, apologies and bananas. A man has been bitten on the arm by a tropical spider which crawled out of a package of bananas. A British supermarket chain, Tesco, confirmed Paul Wright needed hospital treatment after the huntsman spider caused an allergic reaction. Mr. Wright was bitten at home after buying the bananas from a Tesco store. Tesco said it was an isolated incident, offered Wright a $400 goodwill gesture, and apologized. The spider was not poisonous. Ladies and gentlemen, there are more, but there's no more time. The apology of the week, flooding our desk this week because it's so very copyrighted. The Pope reiterated his apologies for the Spanish Inquisition. I do have to add this one. But revised sharply downward the number of witches executed during it. So outsourcing and downsizing, ladies and gentlemen, the news of the week. But that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. My goodness, it flew by, at least for me. I have no clue about how it was for you. The program returns next week at the same time and over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant, WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world on the internet, live and archived at two different locations, whenever you want it on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, and now as a free download at audible.com/theshow in MP3 form. Isn't that special? And it would be just like finding a real confirmed $8 banana if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. To get on the mailing list for those very occasional email blasts from the host of this broadcast, just write to, send an email to liblast-subscribe@luxmedia.com. The show internet services by Steve Mack. Our thanks to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks for help in today's broadcast. The show playlists, usually available at harryshearer.com. Or maybe it's subscribe-leblast@luxmedia.com. It's one of the two. I'm so very business. I'm not as businesslike as Al-Qaeda, okay? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.